Amadaba Kunjabiyadi Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabiyadi Gopi Jana Vallabha Giridhvara Dadi Gopi Jana Vallabha Giridhvara Dadi Yashoda Nandana Gajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Gajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabiyadi Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabiyadi
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Payavaragacaya Siddharasati Sri Srimad Abhaita Saranaravanda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Payavaragacaya Siddharasati Sri Srimad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavanda Ki Jai Vishnupadagacaya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Namacaya Srila Pujasthana Ki Jai Prem se kaho se Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaur Bhaktavinda ki jai Grantarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai Gop Premanande All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 22, verse, which one is it? 48. Maitreya Uvacha Te Atma Yoga Pattayaha Adi Rajena Pujitaha Shilam Tadiyam Shansantaha Khe Abhavan Mishatam Nurinam Maitriya Uvacha Ti Atma Yoga Pattaya Adi Rajena Pujitaha Shilam Tadiyam Sanshanta Kebhavan Mishatam Rinam Maitriya Uvacha T
ಆದಿಯಾತ್ಮಯೋಗಪತ್ತಯ ಆದಿರಾಜೇನ ಪೂಜಿತಾಃ ಶೀಲಂ ತದೀಯಾಂ ಶಾಂಸಂತಃ ಕಿಯ ಭವನ್ ಮಿಷ್ಟತಾಂ ನೃಣಾಂ.
Maitreya Uvacha, the great sage Maitreya continued to speak. Te, Atma Yoga Pattayaha, the masters of self-realizations by devotional service. Adirajena, by the original king. Pritu, Pujitaha, being worshipped, Shilam, character, Tadiyam, of the king, Shamsantaha. How do you pronounce this? Eulogizing? Eulogizing. You have to excuse my German accent and vocabulary. K, in the sky, Abhavan appeared, Mishatam, while observing, Nrinam, of the people. Translation. The great sage Maitreya continued, being thus worshipped by Maharaj Pritu. The four Kumaras, who were masters of devotional service, became very pleased. Indeed, they appeared in the sky and praised the character of the king, and everyone observed them. Purport. By His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. It is said that the demigods never touch the surface of the earth. They walk and travel in space only. Like the great sage Narada, the Kumaras do not require any machine to travel in space. There are also residents of Siddhaloka who can travel in space without machines. Since they can go from one planet to another, they are called Siddhas. That is to say, they have acquired all mystic and yogic powers. Such great saintly persons who have attained complete perfection in mystic yoga are not visible in this age on earth because humanity is not worthy of their presence. The Kumaras, however, praised the characteristics of Maharaj Prithu and his great devotional attitude and humility. The Kumaras were greatly satisfied by King Prithu's method of worship. It was by the grace of Maharaj Prithu that the common citizens in his domain could see the Kumaras flying in outer space. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Maitreya Uvacha. Ta Atma Yoga Pattaya Adirajena Pujitaha Shilam Tadiyam Shang Santa Ke Bhavan Mishatam Narinam. Translation again. The great sage Maitreya continued, being thus worshipped by Maharaj Prithu, the four Kumaras who were masters of devotional service became very pleased. Indeed, they appeared in the sky and praised the character of the king, and everyone observed them. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namne Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pachani Nivishesha Shunyavari Pashadyadi Shatani Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasri Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that the demigods never touch the surface of the earth. This is one of the specific features of the demigods. I was thinking, watching the kirtan sometimes, it also resembles the demigods. Those devotees also don't touch flying. Anyway, they also don't cast any shadows. That's another feature of the demigods. They don't cast shadows, they don't touch. In other words, they exist in a different dimension, which is not accessible to our three-dimensional experience. The demigods exist in higher dimensions. And still, those higher dimensions are relative to the absolute existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like when we read in the Krishna book that when Lord Brahma visited Lord Krishna in Dwarka, he perceived hundreds, thousands, it is described even millions of other Brahmas. Because Lord Brahma, naturally he thinks he is the only existing Brahma, the architect, engineer of this universe. The Lord Brahma is the most powerful living being in this within this universe. Just like a householder, he sees himself in a particular very important position related to his family. So in one sense, all these living beings within this universe, Lord Brahma, he also thinks, this is my great family. He has that power to create all these various bodies of the living beings, of course not independent from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are nine processes or nine categories of creation described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Lord Brahma also, he has creative power, very, very powerful living entity. And he could not perceive beyond his universe. He was not aware that there are innumerable universes and innumerable Brahmas. Our particular Lord Brahma possesses four heads. But other universes are much larger in size, and the Brahmas in those universes do not possess only four or ten, but even hundreds and thousands of heads. So how can we understand such phenomenon. I remember in Germany we had one artist, and he, a painter, artist, and he was quite good. The only thing that his paintings, when he depicted Lord Krishna, the gopis, then you could clearly understand that he thought that the transcendental body of Lord Krishna or the gopis or the eternal associates of the Lord are made of matter, bones. How do you call this? A physiognomy? When you study. So he was very good in that. You could see, you know, the muscles and veins and where the joints are being located, perfect. But the devotees always felt a little bit uneasy portraying, say, looking at his artwork, because those bodies he was painting resembled too much a mundane material body. Anyway, we tried to explain to him that in the Vedic literatures it is stated, Ishupanishad also, the Lord, he does not possess any veins like we do, or flesh, muscles, skin, etc. Sometimes it is described that Lord Krishna's skin is very soft, but that is not the same skin as we possess, as we have. The material body is simply a perverted reflection of the eternal spiritual body. Just like sometimes we give the example of the hand and the shadow of the hand. There are similarities, definitely. If you move the hand, the shadow also moves accordingly. Their shape, two-dimensional space, two dimensions are there, form, shape. But still, if you compare the shadow of the hand with the original hand, there's so much of a difference. There's a third dimension. Nuances, varieties of colors, and skin, bone, hairs, etc. So blood, so many additional elements. So it is like this. If we compare the material body or the material existence with the spiritual body, spiritual existence, it is exactly like that. Sometimes we tend to think just the opposite, that this mundane creation existence is so full of varieties. And we have experienced life after life how we become entangled in the complexities, varieties of material activities, of desires, reactions to those activities and desires, full of variety. Only on this planet we already experience so much variety. You know, one country is so much different from another country. The language, people, the traditions, habits people have. Just like when I visited Russia for the first time, I was bewildered. How people, the way they think, even till now, being more than 10 years in Russia, visiting Russia and Russian countries, I still cannot figure out the mentality of a Russian. I mean, I'm not indicating anything. They're nice people and everything. But just the way they think, very difficult. And I believe Russians have a hard time to understand how Germans think. What is their mentality? And then you visit India, completely different. America, also different. The American nature differs very much, let's say, from the Scandinavian nature. The Scandinavians, people from Sweden, they're very reserved, very quiet. You never know what they really think. They're very polite. America, I experience there's a difference. People often let you know what they think. And as devotees, it is it is actually not bad. It is nice to be straightforward. Of course, one shouldn't be too straightforward. You walk with a, you know, with a door in your hand into the room, so to speak. You have to open gently the door and then make a point. Not fall with the door into the room and make your point. So, different characters, different, the way people look, also completely different. The Japanese, they look so much different from Italians. I'm visiting Mongolia sometimes. I would actually like to show you some nectar. I'm trying to acquire a data projector, and I have a lot of nectar, various movies. I have one documentary movie about Ukraine, our preaching in Ukraine, how everything developed there. You will see devotees speaking in Russian, and they tell their story, how they joined. Amazing. It's just very exciting. And how the yatra developed. So I would like to show you all these. Maybe we can, in the evening, set aside a little time. I would like to show you some nectar. So let's hope everything will work out. So I'm visiting Mongolia also. And again, the people look very, they look nice. Very, the faces are very, very round, like a full moon, and extremely small eyes. So their nature is different. It takes a while to really get them to know. But, you know, beneath the various layers of material variety, you find the same common pure, eternal spirit soul. This is what what excited me about Krishna consciousness when I became acquainted with the philosophy. There's a underlying common factor of existence of everything. And that's the meaning, precisely the meaning of the absolute truth. There's one underlying principle on which everything rests. And since the living entity, the soul, is part and parcel of the Supreme Absolute Truth, it also possesses that same spiritual, absolute spiritual nature. But of course, being part and parcel of Krishna, our absolute nature is relative to Lord Krishna's absolute nature. He is the cause of all causes. He is the ultimate absolute truth. Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti shapyate. In the beginning, one perceives that all-pervading spiritual nature. And when one advances in spiritual life, one perceives the localized aspect of the Supreme Lord situated in everyone's heart. Ishvara sarva bhutanam ridesha juna tishtati. As Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, those who are spiritually advanced, they can perceive that spiritual spark in every body. He doesn't see any difference whether it is a body of a learned person or simple person, animal, elephant, dog eater, whatever it might be. The transcendentalist, he perceives only that spiritual spark, same spiritual spark. So unless humanity comes to that platform of realization, there cannot be any unity in the world, in society. It is impossible. It will be simply an artificial attempt. It has to be realized. Self-realization, that's the meaning of self-realization. To realize one's eternal self and the self of any other living being, the same spiritual spark, possessing the same spiritual nature. And then my point was, one tends to think that as more we contemplate on the spiritual nature, we think it is something without variety, something vague, something like unexplainable, all-pervading nature, energy. But if we come back to the example of the shadow and the hand, this is precisely the comparison. So there must be so much more variety. And this is what keeps a devotee, a transcendentalist, engaged in the process of devotional service, because he begins to experience that unlimited spiritual nature and variety of the spiritual nature. Just like when we study Srimad Bhagavatam, the nectar of devotion, the Vedic literatures, when we read about the pastimes of Lord Krishna, so much variety is there. And immediately we can understand how limited this material variety really is. Like Lord Krishna, he is also known as Akhila Rasamrita Murti. He is the very embodiment of a transcendental humors or rasas. He is the only supreme living being who is capable of reciprocating perfectly with the innumerable living entities. This is not possible for anyone else. We even have difficulties reciprocating with the two, three, four persons. Even with one person, already we have so many difficulties. The husband, wife. Especially nowadays, so many complaints are there. I do not agree with my husband, I do not agree with my wife. So many conflicts are there. What is the problem? Just two persons. Actually, as devotees, we should be willing to make a compromise for the sake of preserving our spiritual life. What is the problem? Just like one person demands open the window, second person demands close the window. They make a compromise, half open, what's the problem? Just half open, everything is solved. You get something, he gets something. But when we are not willing to make a compromise, then that's the conflict. Open, close, open, close. And then what happens at the end is fighting, and the whole window smashes to the ground, and then everything is spoiled. So let us find a healthy compromise and continue in our spiritual life. But that is difficult if we do not progress in Krishna consciousness, if we do not develop the spiritual qualities, these wonderful qualities of a Vaishnava, tolerance, humility. Of course, Arjuna, he was also Vaishnava. He expressed his humility in a different way, according to Lord Krishna's desires, but that cannot be imitated. Too many householders nowadays think that they are like Arjuna. They always give the example of Arjuna. But that we cannot imitate. The warriors, kshatriyas in bygone ages, just like a king, for instance, kshatriya king, as soon as he was enthroned, he acquired immediately the ashta siddhis, all the eight mystic powers. That's why people had so much respect for the king, because they knew he has all these powers, all these mystic powers he possesses. So they were not just heavy warriors, but they were also very, very advanced in consciousness. And still they never acted independently. The other day we talked about this point, how the brahmanas truly possess everything in society, since they represent perfectly the supreme proprietor, personality of Godhead. So everything really belongs to them, because they know how to engage everything in Krishna's service. And the kshatriyas always consulted the brahmanas, just to make sure, to be on the safe side. They always consulted. This is my plan, what do you think? And then they gave their advice, instructions. So this way the brahmanas protected the kshatriyas, and the kshatriyas in turn, they protected the brahmanas, that they will get what they need to perform their sacrifices, their devotional service. They, such a wonderful society, the Vedic culture. Everything in the Vedic culture is provided that we can fulfill our material needs, of course not excessively. Srila Prabhupada always used to say Krishna consciousness means simple living, high thinking, not the opposite. The high living and primitive thinking. So we should take care of our material needs, what we require, that differs from person to person according to his status in society, and at the same time make nice spiritual progress, and everything is being accomplished. Related to these mystic yogic perfections, Srila Prabhupada explains that elaborately in the Nectar of Devotion. It is also described in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam what these mystic powers are. There is one interesting section in the one of the Puranas that the mystic powers develop as soon as the yogi acquires perfection in pranayama. It's technically called Vayu City. With this Vayu City, all the mystic potencies develop. The prime mystic potencies, perfections, are eight in number. Ashta means eight, Ashta cities. There are Anima, Mahima, Lagima, Prapti, Prakamya, Ishita, Vashita, Kamavasaita. These are the eight mystic perfections. And in that section of the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is described that Lord Krishna, he possesses naturally all these mystic perfections in the unlimited depth. That's why the devotees, not that's why, but this is one of the reasons why Lord Krishna is all attractive. Whatever Lord Krishna does, it is full of mystic potency. Mystic potency and loving affection for his devotees. So this is such a unique combination. To have mystic powers unlimitedly, at the same time to possess that quality of a bhakti, a pure love and devotion to his eternal associates, to his devotees, factually all living beings. Sometimes materialists, when they hear that God is the cause of all causes, he is the creator of everything, they tend to have a difficult time with that. How can he, if he creates everything, how can he create this horrible material world? I'm suffering so much. Just see how much evil things are going on in this world. So how can a God be behind it? But he clearly explains in the Bhagavad Gita, he's not responsible for the activities and the resultant reactions of those activities of the living entity. It is simply their desire. Then of course they tend to protest, but I do not desire to suffer. This is not my desire. Why does the Lord fulfill that desire? Initially, perhaps this was not your desire. But then, by performing activities and creating the reactions are not created by the Lord. We create our own reactions that people don't understand. We create our own reactions. And if we truly want to be freed from the suffering of those reactions, then we have to act according to Lord Krishna's instructions. Just like sometimes when materialists hear that about the process of reincarnation, they also have a hard time with that. What is the use of being punished in this life for something I did in the previous life, because I don't remember anything? Then what's the use? But that is not human life, to don't know anything. That's not human life either. We are supposed to know. And that's the duty of the leaders of society, to educate people in the Vedic knowledge, that they really understand why they suffer. And yes, that is also due to previous lives activities. So we cannot just say, I don't know, what's the use of punishing me? But that ignorance, it is not meant for human life. Ignorance means non-human life. That we can clearly see. That how so much suffering. Oh, even young children also. Why they always cry all the time? not all the time. I'm not indicating this. It's okay. I'm not indicating anything. Just make a philosophical point. They're nice. Especially when they're very young, because the crying is not that loud. When they get a little bigger, then oops. So why they are crying? What is the problem? Ignorance. They don't know, and then they do something. They burn their fingers, or you know, they want to push their two little fingers into these two holes in the socket, and very dangerous. Maybe can kill a child. But they don't know. They want to push the fingers in it. Always doing something based on ignorance. That's why they suffer so much. So that is not really meant. And this is why we criticize so much the leaders of society, because they simply keep people in ignorance and darkness. We are not into criticizing. A Vaishnava is very, you know, he's humble. He respects every living, what to speak of, leaders of society. He even respects an ant. He doesn't want to harm any living being. That's the nature of a Vaishnava, of a devotee. But why do we criticize then the leaders of society, politicians? Because they simply keep people in ignorance. And that's why people suffer so much. They just don't know. For each and every action, there's an equal opposite reaction. That's the law of nature. So these... Excuse me? I have here some water. I just forgot about it. So, thank you. Excuse me. So Lord Krishna possesses these eight mystic potencies in full to an unsurpassable, matchless degree. And the yogis also, they develop their mystic perfections. As still a devotee, he is not really attracted to it. In that 11th canto, Lord Krishna summarizes these mystic perfections that in one sense, they are a distraction. Hare Krishna. He recognizes me. Now he begins to cry, right? No. So Lord Krishna summarizes that in one sense they are a distraction on the path of devotional service. Of course, for the devotional service, Lord Krishna sometimes gives the devotee also mystic perfections. And that is a fact. When the devotees go on the street, they distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. The things they sometimes do, it is something related to mystic perfection. It's like in Germany, I remember that we had once the idea to engage non-devotees, ordinary people, who were very expert in selling items. We just wanted to pay them, engage them to sell Srila Prabhupada's books. I remember that Hansa Duda, he had many ideas. He was very creative. So he got two or three such persons, very expert in selling things. And so they tried. They went out with the books. They just returned. This is impossible. I cannot sell one book. I cannot do this. Come on, you're so expert. What is the problem? Try again. So they really hardly tried. They couldn't do it. They couldn't do. And our simple devotees, some of them didn't have much training in anything. But they were very enthusiastic. They went out and so many books are just flying out. How is this possible? And Lord Krishna, he gives the devotee whatever. Sometimes I'm thinking, why don't we have a little few more such potencies? Imagine you fly in the sky on the street, approach people with a book. But Lord Krishna, he knows, no. If you fly in the sky, you will stop distribution, quickly. You will just try to enjoy it for your own sense gratification. So Krishna doesn't give so easily, because he knows it will simply distract the devotee from that path of pure devotional service. We have to earn the result of our devotional service very, very hard. Then we tend to appreciate it. But when it's quickly earned, just fly in the sky, people, wow, they just take the... In Russia, I noticed, you don't even have to fly in the sky. When we just brought Prabhupada's books, they were just jumping on us, at us. Literally jumping. Oh, it was such a wonderful time. Now things, situation is changing also. Still, in Russia, people are very enthusiastic about Krishna consciousness. But in the early days, the first time we went over, it was amazing. Even during the class, the people could not wait till you finished the class. It's in the middle, they started approaching you, coming closer, closer. Where are the books? Where are the books? Many, often people bought 2, 3, 4, the same book. And they don't have much money either. Later on, the elderly Russian devotees told me once that, you know how much they pay for one book? It is like 3 or 4 month salary they pay for one book. Then they return home, you know. You can imagine the reaction of the husband or wife. You know. I just spent 3 months salary for this book, you know. So they were risking it. These very old babushkas, you know, very old Russian ladies, it was, you know, hard moving to see it. They stepped forward and then they had this, and the cloth tied, you know, some coins, you know, like a whole body was shaking, and they just got these coins. I also want the book. Amazing. What was my point? Yes. So you don't even require mystic powers flying in the sky, whatever. People are in such a condition, they want Krishna consciousness, they're hankering for it. Then, just the other day, I read a little bit in the Lalita Madhava, and there's one interesting section. It is like a play, an act, you say, act play. Very beautiful description. And there's one section which reminds me of these mystic powers, that Purnamasi, she walks on stage and then she starts talking about the wicked kings like Kamsa and others. And then she noticed Narada Muni is arriving, you know, from outer space. There's also a whole section in the Srimad Bhagavatam, a description about the outer space, inner space, unknown to modern science. In one purport, Srila Prabhupada describes, he explains that modern scientists are not aware of the universal horizontal inner space. It's a very difficult expression. So there's something like inner space, outer space. We have a little experience of inner space. Just like within the heart, there's an inner space. Otherwise, how can the soul, Lord Krishna, exist? When we dream, we move in inner space. When you have a dream, you run all over the place. You also fly over mountains, whatever. Where does this motion take place? It is inner space. Outer space we have. Then Srila Prabhupada also writes in the same purport that modern scientists, what to speak of the space covering the universe? What do they know about that space? So there's so many Vedic concepts completely unknown to modern science. So Narada Muni, he came from outer space, he approached Purnamasi, and then she said, "Oh, expert in chanting Lord Krishna's glories. His hands holding a veena, his matted hair reaching down to his shoulders, and his complexion splendid as the autumn moon. Here is Devashi Narada." So as she spoke in this way, then there was a voice from behind the scene. "As long as there's not the slightest fragrance of pure love for Krishna, which is the perfected medicinal herb for controlling Lord Krishna within the heart, the opulences of material perfection known as the cities, the brahminical perfections like Satya, Samatha, and so on, the trance of the yogis, trance of the yogis, and the monistic bliss of Brahman all seem wonderful for man." So that's a perfect description of how these yogic perfections, these mystic powers, are simply a distraction from the process of pure devotional service. As long as we do not develop our pure love for Krishna, we feel attracted to those mystic perfections. So bhakti, devotion service is meant for the topmost living beings as well as for anybody and everybody, as long as we desire to purify our heart. Then that process is accessible. It is available to anyone. Such a wonderful process. One doesn't require any special qualifications. Just the other day I read one beautiful verse quoted by Rupa Goswami in the Padyavali. And he quotes one South Indian Brahmana. Very wonderful verse. Vyadasya charanam dhruvasya cha vayuvita gajendrasya ka kubjaya kim unamarupam adikam kim tatsudam no dhanam vamshako vidurasya yadava pate ugrasya kim paurusham bhaktya tushyati kevalam nacha gunaya bhakti priyo madhavaha. Vyadhasya refers to one hunter. His name used to be Dharma, a unique name for a hunter, Dharma. So he became a pure devotee of Krishna. And that verse explains what qualities did this hunter Dharma possess. Did he possess any good qualities? No. Still he surrendered to Krishna, he became a devotee, and then of course developed all the good qualities. Dhruvasya cha, charanam dhruvasya cha, or dhruva, Dhruva Maharaj. What were his qualities? He was a 5-year-old boy and he surrendered to Krishna. Then Gajendra, Vayavidya, what knowledge did Gajendra possess? And he surrendered to Krishna. And then Kubja, the maidservant of Kamsa, Adikam Rupam Adikam, did she possess a very beautiful body? No. She surrendered completely to Krishna. And then Vidura, Brahmana, Sudama Brahmana first. Kim tat Sudama, Sudamno. Sudama Brahmana, did he possess any wealth? No. He was completely surrendered to Krishna. So much so that Lord Krishna felt attracted to the poverty of Sudama Brahmana. He was very poor. Krishna felt attracted to his poverty. Amazing. And then Vidura, what was the social status of Vidura? Did he have a very high social status? No. Ugrasya, his prowess, that also was no obstacle. And then that verse concludes, Lord Madhava, he is only interested in pure devotional service. He is not attracted to these material qualities. So Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I would like to stop at this point. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for your patience. Are there any questions? Perhaps one or two? Sorry, quite late. Yes? Yes, there's no, you cannot even begin to compare. There's no comparison.
There's no comparison.
No.
Does that mean that, when you say there's no comparison, what I take out of that is that within the material world, very hatedness is exhibited only within the 3 dimensions, or the 4 dimensions of time and space. And in the spiritual world, very hatedness can be equal to different dimensions of existence.
It is the important difference is vastu. The vastu. Just like, again, back to the example of the shadow of the hand and the original hand. The major difference is vastu, the substance. So the nature of a shadow is that it does not possess the substance of the original hand. That vastu is a very important term. That's why we describe this entire material variegatedness, entire material existence as illusion. Of course it exists, a shadow exists. But the substance is not there. The substance of the original hand is just a shadow. Something casting from the original object. The original object, that's the real substance, that's reality. So it is like that. And a devotee, I try to explain, who gets absorbed in the spiritual substance of reality, he becomes disillusioned. He does not feel attracted to the shadow-like variety of this material world. Of course, that cannot be imitated, but gradually we try to approach that platform. Not like the Mayavadis do. That is impossible for us. Mayavadis, they just reject. They just repeatedly, jagat mitya. This world is false, this world is false, this world is false. They're contemplating on this world all the time by repeatedly saying it is false, it is false, it is false. But they're contemplating. It's another form of attachment. But as Lord Krishna states, one who experiences the higher taste, then you don't feel attracted. That's our process. We engage everything in Krishna's service. And then we experience the devotional, spiritual nature. And then that's our process of detachment. These two terms, virakti and vairagya. Virakti and vairagya. Vairagya means to detach yourself from the objects of attachment, but in the mind you can still remain attached like anything. And virakti, that's the higher principle. Virakti means because of experiencing a higher taste, you don't feel attracted anymore. Of course, I'm not generalizing, but examples are there that the material condition means that we think that we are the controllers. We try to imitate Lord Krishna in this world. Lord Krishna is Ishvara, Ishvara Parama Krishna. He's the supreme controller, and imitating him. Implies, it means that we try to also be controllers. And that tendency sometimes we find. That controlling mentality, rather serving mentality. A householder, he should see himself as a servant of his family. Family, wife, children. I'm serving them. What do you need? And sometimes, of course, somebody has to say something in the family. But that should be done in a very loving and caring mood. If the father really has to place some restrictions on, on the needs and desires of the family members, but that should be done in a very caring, loving mood. I don't think this is good for your spiritual life. No! No way! Only over my dead body. Just like you can treat young devotees in two different ways. You can tell them very, very harshly to not eat with the left hand. When there's prasadam, time for prasadam, you can chastise them and rebuke them. Why are you eating? Or you can gently rub on the shoulder of that young devotee. No, we don't eat with the left hand, you see. So they also react accordingly. Oh, I didn't know, sorry. No, no problem. There are always two different ways of doing things. And that sometimes I perceive that the other way of doing things in householders, how they try to restrict the members or correct situations, whatever, they sometimes take to the other method, chastising, being harsh, rather gently rubbing the back. Not good, you should not do. Actually, that's more effective. If you're too harsh, then something happens with it, you know, with the other person. You just shut off inside. You don't hear anything anymore. If you do it in a very loving way, ooh, that's much more heavy. Then you're much more willing to listen. Of course, that also should not turn into a motivation. The real interest should be to help the family. Haribol. See, just like mother also, she doesn't take the child and throws it out of the window.
What is this?
Very careful, she tries to tell the child something in a very careful way.
That's enough.
Very careful. So we all spiritual children. We have to be treating each other very careful. Spiritual life is very tender. And we want to survive in Krishna Consciousness. We want to keep going for the rest of our lives. So I always feel that devotees have to be much more caring, loving. Of course, not overly sentimental. You know, we have to also be practical. Just like we have seen in Srila Prabhupada, these two aspects. He was so loving and caring, beyond, you know, example. You cannot give any. Such a wonderful, the way Prabhupada loved his disciples and everybody. What was that? One devotee told Srila Prabhupada, one disciple, Srila Prabhupada, everybody loves you. And Prabhupada, he said, yeah, because I love everybody. Also, that was Prabhupada's return. Because I truly love everybody. That's the reaction, reciprocation. What was my point before that? Yeah, caring, loving. Yeah, yes. So that these two aspects we saw in Srila Prabhupada, he was so loving and caring, but at the same time very practical also. So we have to take care of practical things. We have to be very practical. And for the sake of being practical, sometimes we have to be, you know, decisive and step forward, that, you know, keep things going. But at the same time preserve that loving and caring attitude toward others. It's not easy to do both. Yes? I don't really understand the question.
We're beings with senses.
Yeah.
So there's a sentient experience that we're all encompassed by.
Yeah.
So we can't just reject that as though it doesn't exist. So is it that we have to find that balance which helps us utilize the senses so that we can focus?
Yes. That's the Varnashram Dharma. That's the Varnashram system. That we do both. We nourish, cultivate our spiritual life. At the same time, we take care of our material needs. Just like I always used to say, I'm keeping saying that we should avoid. The only thing we reject really is sinful desires, sinful activities, sinful desires that we have to reject because we cannot engage that in Krishna service. It's not possible. So sinful desires, sinful activities that we have to give up. We have to renounce. And of course that also differs. Some person can do more, some less. It depends. And we are all different, you know, individuals. But those who take initiation into the process of Krishna consciousness, they have to give up very clearly these sinful activities, sinful desires. Material desires we can have as many as you like, as long as you can engage them in Krishna service. We are not against material desires or material activities. Just like brushing our teeth in the morning, And this is a clearly material activity. But just because we are devotees, we should not stop brushing our teeth. This is material nonsense. I want to be engaged in spiritual activities. What is this brushing teeth? We have to to brush my teeth, but that does not necessarily mean as soon as I brush my teeth, I fall into Maya, because it's a material activity. We do this, but at the same time, we try to be Krishna conscious. And we think of Krishna as something, look at picture of anything. So we try to maintain our Krishna consciousness somehow by performing those material activities. Eating also, eating in itself is a material activity. But how to engage it in Krishna service? We eat prasadam, do the prasadam prayers, somebody reads from the Krishna book doing prasadam, like that. So material activities have to go on. We have to maintain the body nicely, make sure we are healthy. That's also one thing which becomes more and more important issue as we grow older. We have to take care of the body. Just when we were young devotees, we literally ignored, you know, the demands of the body. It was not very healthy. You know, now we suffer because of that. I remember when I went out on the street during the winter time, I explained to you the other day, it was in Switzerland, it was so cold, you cannot imagine. So cold, 20, 25 below zero. And still we took our showers outside. I was a Sankirtan leader, I wanted to set the example. We took shower outside. I walked on ice, you know, to the next river, flowing river, you can imagine. 20 below zero, the water was flowing. So 20 below or whatever, you know, water. But I didn't care. I thought we have to take our shower. And I took the cup, and as soon as that water hit my chest, I flew back 2 meters. Like an electroshock. You know, sliding, you say, sliding over the ice with my behind. Like, so I couldn't believe it. I was just shocked. And then I went back to the car. All the devotees remained in the car. I told them, anyway, we can take the shower later. Try to be tough. I mean, what things we didn't do. I don't everything. So we literally ignored our body because we really thought this body is Maya. The family also. I remember when my mother visited me for the first time, being a devotee. She naturally, affectionate mother, she wanted to kiss my cheeks. And I told her, this is Maya, Maya, you can't. I just pushed her to the side, you cannot do it. I'm a brahmachari now. She said, what? Brahmachari, you cannot do this. So I pushed her, I mean, heavy. I don't understand why I did it, but I did it. It was Maya, everything was Maya. Mother is equal to Maya, almost the same sound. Ma, mother, Maya. Everything Maya, Maya, you have to reject. And the body also, we thought, you have to cross over all these needs of the body, just transcend it by force. And in this way make spiritual progress. So as we grow older in Krishna consciousness, we have to, you know, rethink in such a way that I really want to keep going nicely in my Krishna consciousness for the rest of my life. So we have to learn to distribute our energy and take care of the body that we can continue nicely, stay healthy as much as we can, etc. So I really feel it is about time to stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hare Krishna.